The Koivic Pod on Off the Ball.
That's two great performances back to back for them, and collecting 4 points from those two games is probably something that they would have set out to try to. They make it just very, very difficult for teams to break them down.
Subscribe to the Koivic Pod on the Off the Ball app now.
The Racing Pod
on Off the Ball
with William Hill. Who you got? 18 plus. See gamblingcare.ie.
Yeah, welcome to episode 81 of the Racing Pod. It's Johnny Ward standing in for John Duggan. And last week, Tom Malone was in the hot seat. He's actually the analyst this week. But it's somewhat of a poignant show this week because, and I actually thought this day would never come. I thought this man, if ever there were a man who was going to defy mortality and defy everything that he's been doing for the last decades and decades and decades. And just as I was preparing to come out here, and I was actually late running out as the news came in, that Kevin Prendergast, just shy of his 93rd birthday, has passed away. So we'll pay tribute to Kevin, and then we'll later on the show, we'll look at Royal Ascot. The first half of the pod each week is free to air, and the second part, exclusively for members, be sure to go to offtheball.com. /join and yeah, we're here every week for analysis, reviews of the news of the week and a bit of tipping as well. And Tom's been in great form the tipping this year. Kevin Prendergast, yeah, he's passed away at, as I say, just shy of his 93rd birthday. And I don't know, one of the last times personally I interviewed him, I remember him telling me how his father, the legendary Darky Prendergast, advised him to give up the cigarettes, and I think Kevin was 50 at the time. And I remember coming back from meeting him that time. It was at the Curra. I was with Patrick McCann, I think, the race post photographer at the time. And Kevin had arranged to meet us in the Curra Gallops at something like 6 in the morning. And he fed us with duck eggs, I remember, over breakfast. And I was like, this man is just incredible. He was, at that stage, he was probably in his mid-80s or something like that. So he had a long way to go. But what struck me was that, yeah, his father, practically on his deathbed, said, you need to give up cigarettes. He did that. Kevin, up until, as far as I know, up until practically the end, and was obviously training horses, was still going fishing, still playing golf, still having 3 or 4 pints of a night. He was the quintessential legend of a man for me. He was so inspirational. And my sympathies to all his family on today's passing.
Yeah, what a man, what a character. And as you said, I think right up to the end, they were still playing a bit of 9 holes of golf and, have a couple of pints and go shooting or fishing or whatever. But an incredible man, incredible trainer, incredible amount of his luck when you're around that long. Brilliant people will come and go through his yard. But, Chris Hayes would always have said that, that's where he learned his trade. Mm. Obviously, he always referred to him as the boss, and a great place for apprentices to go, as far as I understand as well. Great place to learn. And he obviously backed the young fellas too. He would give them rides. I mean, my first kind of memory of him of a horse would have been, Oscar Schindler winning those back-to-back Irish ledgers back in the day. And, Stephen Crane is a bit of a character as well. And he would have ridden him, and obviously didn't have a lot of big name rides throughout his career, but that was one of the horses that really was brilliant for him. And then obviously Latterly had his Guineas winner there in Autad, and I remember Lac Colina as well, Goodwin and the Curra too. But brilliant man, had some great horses, and recently kind of sold up his place as well. I remember the Firestown base there at the Curra. So it was obviously winding down. He didn't have someone who wanted to come into the business. Not that you'd really recommend coming into training horses these days, but and so his legacy kind of ends today brilliantly. But born in 1932. Imagine what he hasn't seen, how Irish racing has progressed from then to now, and the experiences you would have seen and the change is just phenomenal.
Yeah, like that line from the Yeats poem about the wise and simple man, like Kevin Prendergast, for me, he was just, it was this idea that you could be going into your 90s and still doing everything you did basically in your 20s, like give or take. He was literally training. He trained his Guineas winner was, I think, 40 years after his first, just looking at the stats here, his first winner, I was in the Phoenix Park yesterday, that's where his first winner was, at the now defunct Phoenix Park, Zara, in May 1963. Like you can, May 1963, 62 years ago. And his death on June the 20th comes exactly 45 years. So he obviously gave up cigarettes at, well, late 40s or whatever. And just borrowing from Richie Forrestler in the Race Post, in a career spanning more than 60 years, he went on to scale many of racing's most exalted peaks, with Great Filly Pidgeys becoming his first classic winner in 72 by landing the Irish 1000 guineas at 20-1, ridden by Walter Swinburne. And Bill Williamson was then aboard when she won the Pretty Polly, and she crowned a memorable season by beating the colts in the Ledger, T.P. Burns in the saddle. Conor Pass in 73 was a Ledger winner. 77, he won the guineas at Newmarket, the 2000 guineas at Nebbiolo, and who beat the Minstrel, who was third. At that time, Prendergast just the third Irish trainer after his father and Vincent O'Brien to win the Newmarket Classic. And then you had Oscar Schindler, Miss Beatrix, Kingford, Lacaline and Termagant, and then Autad, who was this great story of coming from the Madrid background. And as you mentioned, that Chris Hayes, who was Chesney, I think he might even have, well, maybe he didn't nickname Chesney, but there was this contrast of Chris Hayes has always looked younger than he is, this like really fresh-faced kid riding for Kevin Prendergast, who even at that stage was probably about 80-odd.
He was in his 80s, yeah. He was in his mid-80s.
Just incredibly inspirational. I mean, I used to, like, this idea that he'd just have a couple of pints, he'd get up in the morning, he'd do his training, he'd go fishing, as you say, go shooting, go to the curragh, go to the races, and just be talking about the two-year-olds for next year.
Yeah, I mean, just, and he always had he nearly always had a 2-year-old too. You know what I mean? That first maiden in the Curragh in March, you'd always be thinking, oh, does Kevin Prendergast have one in this? And, you know, always just associating with those early season types as well. But yeah, great man. He'd be sadly missed. And remember, the Curragh made a nice presentation to him, and it was kind of pictures of all these horses he had, and it was just such a huge big frame because there was so many good horses that, you know, had won group races at the Curragh over the years.
Yeah, Oscar Schindler was a Hardwick winner as well, and this will be a segue into Roy Lascott. Kevin was born in 1932 in Australia, and his biggest win as an amateur rider was in Galway in 1959, around the time Dermot Well rode at 15 in Galway. So he's probably, Dermot Well rode a winner, probably not the similar time, and he was assistant to his dad for 6 years, and he earned much of his kind of trade in Australia, but as I say, he did have a Royal Ascot winner. And what was the last thing I was going to say about him? Yeah, I was actually only saying this lately, and obviously now it's gone, but you know, this idea of Jim Bulger, Kevin Prendergast, Dermot Well and John Ox in a room just having a conversation, even without Jim, you put the three Curragh trainers. And I've always found it really odd that the four of them didn't really have an obvious heir apparent. Kevin, there was nobody coming up who was ever going to take over. Obviously, Dermot Well's sons have helped, but there was never going to be another Dermot Well. John Ox is retired. Jim Bulger's strike rate has gotten quite low now, and he's kind of, I guess, winding down a little bit. And it is sad. It feels like the end of an era. The start of the end of that era, I suppose.
Yeah, that is sad. And you know, sometimes horse racing gets kind of pillared for just having all of these kind of dynasties. It's all, you know, because your family's in it. Well, of course, I mean, if your parents do a job, you're far more likely to do the same job. And if you grow up and it's something that's as immersive as having a yard, you know, of course, it's highly likely that you're going to go into it. But yeah, to not see those names on the race card, just the only kind of comparable I can take it to is when Paddy Smullen Jr., his name started appearing on the race card there last summer. That was just one of those ones where it really kind of hit me that we're getting old and there's a transition to the next sort of generation. But yeah, to not see the names Prendergast, Ox, Weld on the race card anymore is very, very, very strange. It's a very, very strange feeling to not see them there.
Yeah, it's two things I feel racing doesn't celebrate enough is the quality in terms of females and males in terms of the workforce. It's literally split down the middle, and trainers and all of that. And the other thing is the longevity of trainers. So Kevin Prendergast training a classic winner in his late 80s. John Kiley had the winner of the last Leopardstown last night and was still riding out up until a few years ago. And I think there's marvellous documentary potential in celebrating these people who, like, it's just that the people who are listening to this in the car or whoever it is, they're in traffic tonight, or maybe they're listening at home on the radio. You see people who work with horses, the shape they're in. I actually think it's the healthiest lifestyle. It's just to be around horses and outdoors.
Injuries aside, possibly.
Say, well, as a jockey, fair enough. But if you work with horses, and particularly then you end up training them, and you're with horses every day, and you're in the outdoors, like Kevin Prendergast was 90, but like there would be people in their 40s who would feel older than him the way he was going. for me, and sorry, that thing as well about giving up cigarettes, it's never too late to make a change in life for the better.
Yeah, sorry, there was one other person that just came across my mind there, because he was recently interviewed on Racing TV, was Kevin O'Ryan, was Pat Hughes. I don't know if you saw the interview, just absolutely magic. You know, another older trainer, he's handed the license on to his son now, but just a brilliant man to land a touch. But I just thought he was great. And, you know, like you say, I just want to hear from these guys. You just want to hear them tell stories, don't you?
Very sad news that Kevin Prendergast passed away, and our condolences to his family. And it's an Irish thing to say, but that will be a big funeral. Everyone in racing will want to pay, I hope, anyway, their respects. And I know we've had, you know, a lot of tragedy in racing in recent times. And there's an absolute sense of celebration with this, because Kevin lasted to nearly 93 years of age, and he was an utter inspiration. And it will be obviously a sad occasion when he's laid to rest, but there will be a sense of joy at what he achieved. And this will be, it's a cliche, but this will be a very much celebration of his life, and so many people inspired by him. I've been inspired by Royal Ascot this week. Where do we start? The Aidan O'Brien train, 2-year-old, one of them wasn't even there. One of them, Bugsy was given it as Charles Darwin as his nap at Navan not that long ago, when he was, imagine if you backed him first time out and he was only fourth at the Curragh. That's how racing can be a game of ups and downs. But what have you made of it? We're on Friday. We're coming into Friday's meet at the moment.
Yeah, magic. Great. Like Aidan's horses have been running well, but I think it's good when his horses run well but don't dominate. You know, I think that's good. I mean, not a great week for Charlie Appleby, but a good week for Godolphin. Side Bin Surer obviously having a winner, a couple of winners for Jonathan Eddie Gosden in the blue. So, it's had a bit of everything, hasn't it? Like, just high quality, good rides, you know, the drama, Rosalien getting done a short head was personally painful.
Race one. But you backed Rosalien.
I just thought, but in saying that, there was so many really good rides. You know, the Aussies coming over, James McDonald coming over, he gave that a brilliant ride as well. So yeah, the Aidan O'Brien 2-year-olds, from a quality point of view, have been the highlight.
Okay,
for me, but
briefly, okay. Day one, we had Docklands, as you say, nailing Rosalien, fantastic race. And flat racing at this level for me is so much more interesting than jumps racing, because like the jockeys are way more relevant. You're talking about tiny, tiny margins. I'm not saying it mattered Mark Zara, you know, winning by a short head or not, but
it was something really interesting in his post race interview I picked up, and he said he got a guy to do the form for him. He goes, I have a guy that does the form for him. He just told me to track these two, so I did. And then, you know, he had a plan, and then he just told how he reacted to following a couple of horses. And then, you know, he followed the second Judmont horse, dragged him into the race, then a kick for home. And, you know, Rosalien couldn't get past him because he just got first kick on him.
Then we had Gestad, who you gave a big mention to last week when we were previewing Royal Ascot, that Aidan basically relayed that Aidan kept talking about this horse. I don't recall hardly any Star Spangled Banners he's had of major note, and Star Spangled Banner has been a not entirely straightforward stallion, but we've Star Spangled Banner, Wootton Bassett, and Noné Never with sharp 2-year-olds for Aidan O'Brien at the moment. This was a monstrous performance in the Coventry.
Yeah, brilliant, and just a huge, huge big stamp of a horse as well. Like I said, interesting that he's by Star Spangled Banner. I think he's had some fertility issues. He doesn't have the biggest crops in the ground, but obviously when they land, you know, he's had brilliant 2-year-olds. Remember the horse of Fozzie Stacks from a couple of years ago as well, was very good, won the Marble Hill. His name won't come to you at the top of
the
head.
Yeah, and he's had a lot of Star Spangled Banners actually.
But I'll Wootton Bassett. They're just on Wootton Bassett as well. What can that sire not do? You know, you're talking about winners, group one winners at a mile and a half, and a mile and six, and then you know, forward 2-year-olds winning at Ascot as well. It's a phenomenal season for him.
You remember me, Feel of Gold. I mean, Jesus.
Yeah.
I wasn't expecting this. I genuinely thought Roulin Court, the market was rotten about him, whatever that was about. He ran very flat, I thought. Maybe he ran like a horse that was trained for the Derby. He was beaten nearly 8 lengths in the end. But regardless of that, the way this horse
was
moved to the gears.
He was kicked out of the way. It doesn't matter. Doesn't matter what finished second in this race, because Field of Gold was just unstoppable. Henri Matisse stayed on nicely to pick up a place as well. But like, this race was over in a couple of strides. And, you know, both Colin Keane and John Gosden said afterwards, worried it went a bit soon. I'm sure, like, he wasn't pulling up. Yeah, phenomenal performance.
Yeah, we've a lot of very promising would-be sires on the ground as well. And forgive me if you bring back Kevin Prendergast. sense of Kevin Prendergast, so many horses, saw so many horses in race where he remembered the dam, he remembered the sorry, he remembered the grand dam, the great grand dam, and so on and so forth. And you just see that it's a fascinating time in flat racing because Ballydoyle are looking for that big sire and Mutton Bassett's come along, but there were some ready-made sires this week, and Field of Gold is definitely going to be an exciting stallion. On to day two, the first group one went to Ombudsman, winning the Prince of Wales Stakes. This is one of my tips of the week, actually. I just thought Luxembourg was vulnerable. Now, he looked a bit slow, really, which he does at times, but he probably wasn't at his best. Ombudsman bolted up.
I thought... I thought Los Angeles looked a little ordinary, didn't he? Was kind of going. You could tell he was beat. Sometimes he just, now maybe they went a little bit quick, and that wasn't the most sensible early pace. But it doesn't strike me. That doesn't really add up either. He needs a good solid pace, and then he stays on. But he was beaten early.
I was thinking of this, of course, as True Love was being backed on the day to win the Queen Mary. I was like, if you did the Gestad True Love double at declaration time, in sports betting, you can't back Liverpool, say, next season to win both the league and, say, the Champions League because it's deemed a related contingency. Now, that's not a great example, but there are absolute related contingencies where if one happens, the odds of the other happening is a lot shorter. So bookmakers can't lay you the double because they're utterly related, the two things. So if you backed True Love, was obviously a mad short price, but it was second to Gestad on debut, you could have done that double and you'd be like getting very excited as True Love went to post in the Queen Mary. And like many of the O'Brien horses, just found another gear when needing the Queen Mary.
Yeah, the two-year-olds have just been really banging form, haven't they? To be fair, they were quite sweet on the chances of True Love, particularly dropping back down in trip. The vibes out of Ballydoyle were very strong. And look, she absolutely delivered. She absolutely delivered. Just another brilliant race, isn't it?
The Norfolk Stakes, the Group 2, and often at Royal Ascot, the undercard is more compelling than the main event, particularly the two-year-olds. What do we make of Charles Darwin now? I don't know what to make of Noni and Evers, sorry. I think he's gone slightly backwards in terms of price, and he's probably gone down the pecking order with, obviously, Sayuni is there and... Sayuni's not in Ballydoyle, but
St Mark's Basilica.
Yeah, they've gotten these sires that are up and coming, and obviously Mutton Bassett's the big one now to follow. And Noni and Evers gone back a little bit. The
horse is coming through as well.
The horse that won the Justify is there, and obviously the Justify horse who won the Derby last year. My name is who are we talking about? Have I completely lost
City Troy?
City Troy. You've all these stands coming up, and Noni Never has taken a step back, maybe to some, and he hasn't had a classic winner off the top of my head. How good is Charles Darwin though?
Yeah, he looks very good. He's just gone and won that so handily. Again, it's kind of a similar. They've all kind of put in relatively similar performances, haven't they? Charles Darwin and True Love and Gestad. Gestad in particular, the way he had to run on his own for pretty much the last furlong to catch the far side. So, I just wonder what's next. You'd imagine that Charles Darwin is the one who might end up in, say, the Phoenix Stakes or maybe a Morney or something like that. The speedster, and then the others will probably have to step up. But it's intriguing to where they all fall. I mean, just what happens next at Albert Einstein? Is he going to head to there? Is he going to, go to the go to the Curragh on top weekend? Would he be ready for that? Probably not. It's just intriguing to see what way. I would imagine Charles Darwin won't go any further than six by the end of the season.
Yeah.
And the others will, Gestad and the others will look to step up in trip, and they'll be kind of spread around. Whoever ends up in the debutant and then goes to the National Stakes and the Dewhurst and that,
I think he might win the Commonwealth Cup next year. And I tipped up a horse of his Commonwealth Cup today. By the time you listen to this, judging by the betting, he'll finish down the field. But we'll see how that goes. We were right, but we were wrong to an extent, or I was in the Gold Cup. Thought Illinois was way too short. And in fairness, he didn't even go off favourite in the end. Trawler Man, well backed. It was a good form related gamble. And I think Bugsy may have said this last week. Certainly somebody said that, like, you know, the market will probably, will get this in Illinois. Like, Aidan O'Brien knows exactly what it takes to win a Gold Cup. Illinois at 4 years of age, maybe he'll never get there. He wasn't quite there this year. He'd beaten seven innings, had every chance. My tip in the race week, William, frustrating, it was fourth if you're on him each way, but the writing was on the wall long way out, which is testament to Trawler Man, because he was fresh at the end of the race.
Yeah, jumped and galloped, just made it. He looked at a good ride by William Buick as well. Knew he had the guaranteed stayer. Like, the question mark over Illinois is, would he truly get it? So, you know, in that pace, they're just going to make sure there's no hiding place. You know, Illinois, you had said, is a classier horse than Trollerman, but look, Trollerman's been there, done that. He's seen the back end of Kypreos enough times, and he needed to just go and do it himself, and he did.
I think we only have time to maybe look at one race before the second half of the show, which is for members, and we're going to have plenty to chat about. Two disappointing fields in the features, actually, down Royal and Limerick. Maybe that's related to contingency, because they're both kind of middle distance races, but don't even have the eight runners for the Martin Maloney and the Ulster Derby. We'll talk about that at the second half of the show, which, as I say, is for members. And we will be getting on to William Hill as well for a bit of an update on Royal Ascot. But the race we look at for just the remainder of the show now, on Sunday is, or rather Saturday, is the Queen Elizabeth II Jubilee Stakes. So this is 3:40. What's your take on it at this stage?
Trying to remember the name of the race. Just changed it again. But anyway, the QE2 Jubilee Stakes. Look, the question, like, Storm Boy, see, he's been backed. He's obviously going to strip a lot fitter than he did in his debut in the Greenlands. He was as a bust that
was
day.
He?
But it's still a very disappointing run.
He's still down in the racing post as being a 3-year-old. So
that's the reason for that is because he's a Southern Hemisphere 4-year-old. So he was born in the middle of the year. And so rather than, once you import him into the database, he will technically still be listed as a 3-year-old.
Because it was kind of like lazy study for me, but I was like, this horse is running the Greenlands. He's a 3-year-old taking on the older sprinters by Justify. How could you back this horse? And maybe I'm wrong with Justify thinking they're going to be. He was a fascinating purchase, because they're looking at this and they're like, Coolmore, like, if we have a fast Justify, he could be a very interesting stallion prospect. Are you willing to give him another chance, Bugsy?
Not at the price. Okay. No, not at the price. So just look, he could strip a lot. He will absolutely strip a lot fitter. And from what I understand, I don't know much about Australian form. I put my hand up there, but this guy is not a. You know, like that mare or anything like that. This is not a top class Aussie sprinter. He's a very good Aussie sprinter, but he's not, he's not like one of those bullets they sent over before.
I thought the Banshees of Inisherin was one of the most overrated movies of all time. I don't think Inisherin is overrated. I actually like his chance, give or take 4-1.
I thought he was the one. Liked his comeback run when Kevin Ryan couldn't have been any more negative about his preparation and his fitness, and he still went and won it. And that, look, I love that. Course and distance winner, clearly has this race in mind. I really like him. Lazat is favourite there, and I don't know much about him, but Inisherin just ticks a massive amount of boxes for me, and at 4-1 or so, I think he's an absolutely brilliant price. And it's been an interesting kind of a week, hasn't it? Because while favourites have won, and my goodness, yesterday must have been carnage for the bookies on Thursday. I mean, it was just, five winning favourites and every other horse and all the big handicaps won by single figure prices. Like, so intriguing to see how the betting goes over the next few days. But we have had some big price winners, and those play spots, not yesterday, but the first 2 days, I think it was 1,700 and 1,000 that we mentioned the play spots there and the last week as well.
Bugsy's charity bet is the second half show, but have you any other bet for our listeners?
He's definitely going to stick up Inisherin. Inisherin as definitely one to follow there in the
That is the feature sprint. The feature sprint, we'll call it, and that is the race spot and off the ball. If you listen to the free version of the podcast, we're leaving you here, but if you're looking for more, including our analysis of Saturday's card at Down Royal in Limerick, and Tom's charity bet, go to offtheball.com/join to subscribe to get the full podcast with all our racing tips, insights and stories from the week's action in which we lost Kevin Prendergast, the legendary Curragh trainer.